Music business has changed a lot in the last few years. Music technology has opened up so many opportunities for independent artists, introducing a whole new breed of overnight success stories who've had a video go viral and then suddenly they're the next big thing. I know that Billboard magazine is now using TikTok to create its charts of new up-and-coming music to watch. So this is something we can't ignore. But for every one of these overnight sensations, there are hundreds of thousands of musicians trying to build a following online or offline to become a professional musician that makes a steady living from performing this music that they love. I'm not talking about Beyoncé famous, although that can happen too. I'm talking about artists who want to share their work with their world and pay the bills, live a comfortable life, and do this thing that they love. There's a lot of competition out there because the technology has lowered the barriers to entry, opened up the playing field, and just about anybody with an internet connection and a halfway decent audio recorder can get seen and heard, which is both bad and good because there's just a lot more competition. And the majority of artists out there don't know the right way to build a music career, to build any kind of career. And you're in luck because today we've got Bree Noble. Bree Noble is the founder of the Female Entrepreneur Musician Podcast. She's a music business trainer and mentor. She has been a speaker on all kinds of podcasts. And I've invited her to come share her wisdom today. She's written a book called The 5 Stages of the Musician's Profit Path. And I found this book a few years ago, and it is such a great hands-on how-to guide, not just for musicians who want to build a profitable, sustainable career doing what they love, but for any creative entrepreneur who's on the path of building an audience, building a following around their great work. So strap yourselves in because this is going to be a really fun, informative, insightful conversation with Bree. We span her entire career from the early stages of being in corporate to leaving that and moving into becoming a musician full time, how she did that, and then what was next for her and what was next after that. So grab your pens, grab your pencils, get ready to take copious notes as Bree Noble joins us on the Creative Freedom Show. Cue that fancy intro music.
It's time to unleash your star power and own your dreams without selling your soul. It's time for some creative freedom. I'm Lisa Robin Young, and I'm a creative entrepreneur just like you. I'm also a business coach, helping people across the creative spectrum make great money doing what they love. If you're done with being the world's best kept secret and ready to shine like the star you are, creative freedom is for you. Let's get started.
Welcome to the show. Let's start by just kind of giving us your story, because you've got such an interesting journey from where you began and even as a student, music student, to where you are now. So give us Bree's journey, if you will.
Sure. And I think, you know, that's the good thing about being 52 is that you can see so much like through your journey, how things played out. That you can't see. I have a daughter now that's 21 and she's, you know, getting into that adulting age. And it's like, you have no idea how these things are going to play out, where are these lines, you know, what is going to be a through line and what isn't, and that kind of thing. And I've always found it really helpful as I was getting older to like listen to other people's stories. And I'm like, oh, it's so cool how that played out. And, you know, maybe that'll play out for me, that kind of thing. So I just wanted to say that because, you know, you never know where your journey is going to take you. You never know. And there's so many ways that you could have chosen left when you went right and that kind of thing. So I always loved music. I got very heavily involved in choir when I was in high school, and I was in every choir that they offered. I was doing a bunch of solo competitions, and I decided to go to college in music because I loved it. And I didn't know what else I wanted to do. That was what I wanted to do. So I was majored in vocal performance. After a few semesters, I was kind of thinking to myself, well, they're really training me really well as a musician, but I don't see any way that this is going to become a career unless I'm going to be a teacher. And I kind of dabbled in that and I didn't love it. And I took vocal techniques. I took, you know, music in the secondary schools and all those kinds of classes that you take. And I was like, eh, it's not for me. I just love to perform. But how am I going to turn that into a career when they're not going to give me any ways to do that? So I decided at that point, I'm going to get a double degree in business. I've always loved math and accounting and things like that. So I had decided to take a bunch of business courses, ended up becoming a secondary major in business. And I was glad I did, because when I got done with school, like I said, they'd made me this great musician. I had no idea how to apply that in any way. And even with having the business degree, like they were just completely separate paths. So I think that people are doing a lot better nowadays of merging these paths, but not when I went to school in the 90s. So I graduated, my husband and I got married. We moved to a totally new place where I didn't know anyone. And I would basically have to build a music business from scratch. And I had no idea how to do that. So I was like, okay, I'm going to fall back on this business degree that I have and go get a job in accounting, which I did. And I worked for a few years for a company. And then I found an opening at the local opera company. And I was super excited because I could work in the arts. I had at one point thought I was going to go get a MBA in arts management. And I didn't end up doing that because I only applied to one program, which was UCLA, and they only accepted 10 people and I didn't get in. I got into a bunch of other MBA programs, but just decided it'd be better for me to get some work experience. So I ended up getting the job as director of finance at the opera company in Orange County, California. Absolutely loved it. Was able to, you know, get front row seats to all of the shows and go to all the fancy parties and stuff like that. So it was a great experience because I love the arts. But it was also a bit depressing because I would see all these artists there that were doing their thing. They were, yeah, you know, opera people. They would come, they'd go to our company for a month and then they'd go to another company for a month. They were, you know, living the life and on stage. And I was back in the back room writing their paychecks. And so in the meantime, I was trying to figure out, well, how am I going to have a music career on the side? I was doing all these, you know, like ads in the Recycler, trying to find like-minded musicians and tried out a bunch of bands that were just like total fails. I'm sure many of you can recognize that experience. And I was always trying to fit myself into someone else's mold because I didn't have the confidence to be like, I am an artist. I am enough in myself and I can go out and market and promote myself as an artist, as a singer-songwriter. I thought, well, no one's going to care about me. I need to be part of some brand, some band that's a brand and, you know, and I need to fit myself into them. So this just had me putting myself into bands that made no sense for me. You know, I am a classically trained artist who sings everything from pop and folk to Broadway to classical. And I ended up in an all male heavy metal band just because I wanted to perform, you know, or, you know, I was in an all female alternative rock band a la early 2000s music. And that just wasn't me either. It wasn't utilizing my talents. I could do it, but I felt like I was like putting on a costume every time I was on stage. It made no sense. So after all those failed attempts and after all my experience at the opera, which I loved, but being an arts organization, it was very up and down, especially for the finances. And it was very stressful because there'd be some time periods where we have no money in the bank and I had to decide who I could pay and who I couldn't. And there was one time period where I had to lay off our entire telemarketing team for the whole summer because we couldn't afford them, you know, that kind of stress. And I was, it like took a toll on my health. It really made it hard for me to work. I'd also just had a baby. And so my body was just like, oh, it was like way too much for me. So I had to figure out a way to exit gracefully from the opera because of the stress and what it was doing for my body. I managed to figure out a way to exit gracefully by selling our house in Orange County because it was that time period where you could double your house price in 3 years and move somewhere else. And so that really launched me onto being a solo musician. I finally said, I'm done with these bands. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to do my thing. And I finally had the time to do it because I wasn't working at the opera. I worked there part-time just to help them out with some of the financial stuff back in the early days where you could actually work remotely through gotomypc.com. And so I did that like 8 hours a week while my daughter was in preschool. And then the rest of the time I was building my musician business. And I finally learned how to marry those two things of business and music. I had always been like, oh, well, I'm doing music now. That's totally separate from business. Like, what do you do when you're a musician? Well, you try to attract labels and you try to find booking agents and, you know, all those things that we thought we had to do, instead of just trying to build it like any other business would be built. And once I finally learned how to marry those two things, that's when my business took off. I started utilizing my contacts at churches. I started networking. I started thinking, how would a business build itself if it wasn't in the music industry, and started applying it to that. And that's when things really, really took off. I really focused on my niche, which was being able to sing and tell stories to women who could identify what I was talking about. I found that there were groups called Mothers of Preschoolers groups that I actually attended because I had a preschooler, that they needed a program every week. And so I started performing at all of those and pretty much maxed out all of them in California and performed at all of them and even some in Oregon. And so that's where I started building my music career, touring. I would bring my daughter with me when I would tour. And we would drive all over California and go to these groups and other women's groups and churches and community groups and things like that. And just, I found my niche in those kinds of groups that needed programs. And I was a decent speaker. I'd had experience being on stage in college and having to speak in front of audiences. And so I knew that I could tell some interesting stories. And so that's what I did. And I built my career for several years when my daughter was young doing that. Well, then I had my second daughter and my other one got older and it was a lot harder to tour. So the last time I toured was 2011 when I had an 8-year-old and a 2-year-old. And I was gone for 2 weeks touring to promote my Christmas CD. And after that, I was like, I don't think I can do this anymore. Like, the kids were really sad because I missed out on different things that had to do with Christmas that they wanted me to be at. And it was hard to be away from them. And I couldn't take them with me anymore because they were in school. So at that point, I transitioned into working online with other artists. Now, in the meantime, I told you this story was long. I had started an online radio station called Women of Substance because I had seen that there was not enough representation for women on the radio, on Sirius XM back then, you know, and I knew a lot of great female artists that I had met along the way. And so I created a platform for them. And so once I decided to stop touring, and the opera at this point had actually gone under in 2008 because of lack of funding. And so I thought, well, at this point, maybe I can grow this into a business. And so it had been growing and I started selling advertising for it. And that was how I first started working online. And then by 2015, I had grown such a big email list related to Women of Substance. And all these artists were coming to me and saying, how did you build a career as a female artist? How did you book yourself? How did you market yourself? All of that. How are you marketing this platform, Women of Substance? And so I developed an academy called the Female Musician Academy at that point to help artists in those areas and also all the business stuff that a lot of artists struggle with. And that was 2015. And now we're 9 years later. And in the meantime, I, you know, did all kinds of things like the Profitable Musician Summit. And that's kind of where I adopted the Profitable Musician brand. I wrote a book called The Musician's Profit Path, and just have done tons of coaching and working with artists, even through the pandemic. And then after the pandemic, I was really feeling like I needed to get back out there and perform again. I had really missed it. You know, I'd gotten my kids all the way through school. By that time, I had a kid in college. So I feel like it's time for me to get back out there. And I ended up getting a job as a worship director at a church. So that was me singing every Sunday, which was great because it kept my voice in shape. I hadn't sung for like 2 years because of the pandemic, other than some online demos and stuff. And so I did that and was still running my business. And then in 2023, they asked me, hey, you've got all these business skills. Can you come on and help us on the business side at the church? And so now I do both. I'm the business manager at the church as well as the worship director. And I also still run my business and I still perform on occasion and I still do demos and things like that. You know, I talk about income streams. I got all the different income streams going on over here. So that is my story. It's very long and sordid and complicated, but I think you can see kind of how the through lines happened. How things that I did from the early times, you know, came back and I was able to utilize them later in life.
Yeah. And that was one of the big reasons why I wanted you to kind of expose this whole journey, because I think so many musicians and entrepreneurs think, well, there's one path forward and I have to stay on that path and it's this or nothing. It's do or die and it's this way forever. And anything else is settling or selling out or anything else. And I'm like, no, you have to understand that every step leads to another step. You know, you can only see this much of the road in front of you. You've got blinders on, and until you take a step forward and clear that path, you can't see what you're missing. And sometimes, and I say this to my clients all the time, your goal is not always the goal. The goal gets you to move. It puts you in a direction and you take that step or two or three. And then you're like, oh, hey, I thought I wanted to do this, but that looks more interesting over there. So I'm going to go in that direction now. And you couldn't have seen that if that initial goal hadn't moved you forward. And, you know, when you've had a long career, there are invariably, especially now, pivots that we have to make. You know, sometimes that means being in a shadow career, like in your early days working for the opera. It's like, I'm music adjacent, but I'm not really doing the music stuff, you know, and there's a great article about shadow careers, and I'll find it and I'll link it in the show notes. But it talks about that tension of being really close to what your path is, but not being on your path. Because it's safe, because it gives you what you need in the moment, or because you just don't know how to make the leap, or whatever the reason is. And then you find that way to get out of the shadow career and move into the thing that you love to do. And it's not unicorns and rainbows and perfection right off the bat. We have to strive and do, and we have to learn, and we have to make connections, and we have to build bridges, and we have to find our voice and find our niche. And I love that you said it that way, because that's something that applies regardless of the type of creative entrepreneurship that you're in. Yes, as a musician, you have to find your voice and your signature sound, but also as a designer or as a dancer or as a coach, you have to figure out who you're speaking to, who that audience is, and what your message is for those people, and what your niche is, and how you're going to show up in that niche. Because there are lots of coaches in the world. You're a coach, I'm a coach, we both teach business things, and we do it differently. We attract different audiences because of how they resonate to who we are. And if I showed up trying to be you, or you showed up trying to be me, our people would be like, who are you? What are you? Like, you're not for me anymore, you know? And it's so important that we're paying attention to the portfolio that we're creating. Because I think there was a time, you know, I used to tell my parents this, you know, back in your day, it was 35 years in a gold watch and you could retire and you were in the same job forever. And that is just not reality for almost anybody anymore. Even professors in academia are going to move to two or three or four universities probably over the course of their careers because they've done all they can at that school and it's not
time. Or they're
going to
leave
on
academia totally. I mean, my husband is an English professor, and let me tell you, it's very different in academia than it was when he started.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so when we start to see the writing on the wall that things are changing and they're going in a direction that we don't want to be a part of, we have to make a conscious shift into, okay, well then what's the next thing for me? And it might be scary and it might be different and it might be completely unknown. And yet it's the thing we need to do to step into it. And what door does that open? You know, let's launch a radio station. Like, let's just create a whole network where we can connect all these wonderful people and create a platform. Like, that's risky. That's new. That's not something that's tried and true at that time for you or for most of anybody at that point. You know, internet radio was the Wild West for a while, you know. Now, you know, everybody's got a streaming something going on, but that was not the norm at the time. So to be a pioneer, to cut a path forward that no one else has created, and then to do it well. And to
watch the trends, right? Because then in 2017, I said, you know what? Online radio is not the thing anymore. It's podcasts. Well, actually 2014, I moved it to a podcast. I was doing both. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to put all my eggs in the podcast basket because, you know, online radio is not really a thing anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're seeing that even in terrestrial radio, right? Like, mm-hmm. As I'm working at an NPR station and I'm recognizing, you know, the trends are people want to listen when they want to listen and where they want to listen. And that level of convenience can't be found in, you know, programmed, we run this show at 3 o'clock every day. Like, I'm not available at 3, so I can't, you know, participate. They on demand has become so important to so many types of media that we have to pay attention to that. And we need to be mindful of what we're creating, who we're creating it for, and how they're going to consume it. So thank you for sharing that bigger picture so that we can really see, oh, you know, you said this right at the top, you never know how that piece of your story might help somebody else or change somebody else's perspective. But the other side of the coin is, in the moment, we don't know what's going on behind the scenes in someone's life or journey that's causing them to make those decisions and move in those directions. And we think, oh, and I've heard this from other musicians, I just need to do what they did and follow their path to success, and then I'll become successful too. And you see this in internet marketing, you know, the idea of the cookie cutter blueprint, and you just step one, step two, step three, and you're there. And it's like, just because it worked for somebody else that way doesn't mean it'll work for you. Not everybody can sell their house for twice what they paid for it and like have that much runway. Along the way.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to have that kind of runway. And so it's important for us to know, okay, well, so in order to find the path of success that worked for Bree, we may need to consider having some runway. Now, it may not look like selling a house. It may look like working a job for a little bit longer. It may take a lot of different forms, but there's no denying that having runway and financial breathing room makes it a lot easier to take risks that you wouldn't otherwise take because of the financial pressure to perform in the moment. And so we need to see those stories. We need to know that truth because so many people don't share that information and just dangle the, if I can do it, you can too. And that's just, I mean, that's one of the things that I rail against, because when you don't really know the full picture, it can be very misleading for people who are seriously looking for, show me the path to success because I really want this. And don't leave any steps out. Don't leave any stones unturned. And that's the other reason why I wanted to have you on the show, because your book does that. Your book opens it all up and shows you how and is clear without being without coddling people and without dangling bits of information and not giving them the full picture. And that is so needed, especially for musicians, but for creative entrepreneurs in general, like to know that there's a path forward that you can find that works for who you are and how you're wired to work. And it doesn't have to be mysterious.
Yeah, absolutely. And I will go into my book in a sec. I just wanted to mention one thing about when you mentioned the shadow career and working at the opera and all that. I think this is such an important point for when people are younger. Like, there were so many people that worked at the opera that were related to music in some way, right? But then they were working in the marketing department, or they were working as the building manager, whatever, you know, but they have a degree in piano performance or something, right? But it gave them an opportunity because they really wanted to be around music. They're passionate about music, but it gave them the opportunity to see, like, do I really want to be a performer, or do I want to work around music in some other way? And it turned out differently for certain people. Some people were like, oh my gosh, I love marketing. I love the music. And if I can be around music while I'm doing it, awesome. People like me, it was like, I was happy for a while because I was around music and that's what I wanted to do, versus the previous job I had that was just accounting and invoicing and stuff. So I love that. But then after a while, it was motivating. It was like, I see these people doing their thing. I can do that. I want to do that. I don't want to just be here in 10 years still writing their paychecks, you know? So you can do a job like that in an industry that you like. And I've met so many other artists too, that like sometimes they were teaching on the side because they needed the money. And then that helped them make the runway. Like we're talking about some other people, it's like, oh my gosh, I discovered I love teaching. I don't even like, I love it way more than being a performer. Like I get off on seeing people make progress, you know, and then you learn something about yourself. So I just wanted to throw that out there, because being in some kind of an adjacent thing to what you want to do can be really helpful in clarifying for you. And then if you decide, yes, I want to be a performer, I want to have a musician business, then something like my book can really help you, because it can give you that step-by-step of what you can do to build your career from the beginning, and not try to see other people and do what they're doing, because you might not be in the same place they are.
Right. Right.
So I'll go through that a little bit. And I think one of the biggest things that I wanted to say with this book is like, there are like levels, or there are stages to a music career. And you can't compare your stage with someone else's. When you see someone, well, how come I'm not getting what they're getting? I'm not getting the gigs they have or the press that they have. You don't know where they're at. They Right. could have been doing this for 10 years undercover and you didn't know. So feeling good about the stage you're in and knowing what you should be focused on is so important. And things like, oh, I see artists that are just starting out spending $5,000 on PR agents, or spending lots of money on Facebook ads when they don't know what they're doing, right, to promote their first single, you know? So this will help you to not waste a lot of time and money on doing things that aren't appropriate for your stage of your career. And right. So I kind of have 5 different stages of the career and take you through, like, this is what you should be focused on. And bigger than that, this is what you should not be focused on during this stage, because it will only distract you. It will frustrate you. It will steal your time and money when you shouldn't be spending that on that particular thing at this stage. There is a time and place for it, and we'll get there. But, you know, and then also I talk about, and I think this really resonated with the women in my academy, and not that it wouldn't resonate with men too, but like the emotions that you go through in each stage, and explaining like, this is normal. Like if you're dealing with confidence issues, if you're dealing with burnout, if you're dealing with, you know, a fear of success, like any of those things that we go through in different stages, I talk about those too. Comparison, you know, when we start to get a little bit of success, fear of losing that, like all of those things are very common. And I want people to know that when you experience them, you're not alone.
Right. Right. So before we dig a little deeper into the book, I want to talk about how does Bree define success? How did you define success when your kids were young? Right. And you were doing all the MOPS groups. I was a MOPS member for a time too, so I'm very familiar. How did you define success then? And now that your kids are grown, how do you define success for yourself now?
Back then, well, okay, before that, I was on the I want to be famous train, right? I think we've all Sure. kind of been there. You know, when you're in your 20s, you want to be in a big, popular, you know, band or something like that. And that's kind of why I was focusing on that. Then when I was doing the MOPS groups and all that, it was, I want to get in front of audiences. I want people to hear my music. I want people to, and I think for me at that time, like, success was people coming up to me and saying, wow, you really touched me. People sending me emails, things like that. And getting repeat bookings. I think that was important to me. And just filling my calendar with performances. That was really what I was focused on then. Now, I would say, what am I, you know, what can I do that I really enjoy that makes me feel like I'm fulfilling my purpose, but I also am not feeling like I am burnt out? Because I've been through those stages of my career. You know, when I ran a summit, like, it was amazing. But after 2 weeks, I just wanted to, like, stare out the window. Like, I had no energy left, no nothing. Like, it had totally depleted me.
Yeah.
And so I want to be in a place where I can enjoy the work that I'm doing, feeling like I'm doing work that is utilizing my talents, my knowledge, my experience, and is having a ripple effect in the world, but not feeling like my calendar is overwhelmed with meetings and my time is not my own and that I, you know, don't have time to make a new recipe if that's what I want to do, you know? So I think that's what's new about the way I think of success now. And now it's not just like the, oh, you know, your music touched me or I got an email, like getting to see the ripple effect of my Academy members. I got a chance to meet 8 of them in person in New York that I've never met before, like 2 weeks ago. And it was incredible. Like, I've worked with some of them for 9 years. Some of them actually I've known since the start of Women of Substance. I've been playing their music and never having met them. And then they're telling me about, you know, because of you, I did this and I did that. And now we collaborated and we created this. And, you know, so it's really the ripple effect. And I know it's kind of cliche to say like legacy, but it really is kind of the ripple effect is your legacy. And that to me is success. And also just having that freedom in my own schedule too. That's why I don't coach anymore. Because I did not like that feeling of looking at my calendar and it was full of everyone else's time on my calendar. So I did give up coaching a couple years ago because I didn't want to resent my clients. And so I much more enjoy teaching and stuff on workshops and podcasts. And I love podcasts, but where I don't feel like I'm overwhelmed with things I have to do all the time.
Yeah, I totally get that. And that's the beauty of being your own boss and owning your own business and running your own show is that you get to decide. I tell people all the time, so long as it's legal, you can build it however you want to, you know? I mean, that's the beauty of, you know, I'm only going to work one day a month. Hey, if it works for you, cool. I'm only going to work on Saturdays. Okay, if that works for you, cool. Because other ways we get resentful, we get burned out, we get stressed, we're saying yes to the things we really want to say no to, we're filling our calendars with things we don't want because we think that's what we're supposed to do or how it should be, instead of really tapping into, when I am at my best, this is how I want things to look and feel and work. And, you know, especially my youngest just graduated high school and I'm like, freedom, I'm free, you know, and to not have some of those other encumbrances on your capacity, on mm-hmm. your time, on your money, on your schedule, whatever. And really knowing that you can craft something, whether you want to be Beyonce famous or Mops famous, and just have that level of success as you define it, right? Instead of driving towards somebody else's goalposts, you get to decide what goalposts work for you. Do you find that that's a conversation that you have a lot in your community?
Yes, for sure. I have a lot of older artists, mature artists, and I've always attracted them. There are some artists that have been with me that were in their 60s when I met them, and now they're in their mid 70s, you know? And I have even artists that are in their 80s in my community and just thriving, like doing so much, but also trying to make sure that they take care of themselves.
Sure.
You know, they feel this drive. They have so much creativity inside of them. They feel like they have so much to share with the world still, but they need to make sure they do it in a way that doesn't jeopardize their health. So we definitely have that conversation a lot. And also, you know, I'm a type A. So I definitely went through that phase where, like, I equated my calendar being full with my deserving of the money that I was making.
Mm.
And I had to get over that.
Say it again. Say it again for the people in the back.
Yes, yes. I equated my calendar being full when I would open up my calendar and look at it and be like, okay, yep, I deserve that money that I'm getting for my salary when it comes through. And I had to get over that because if you feel that way and but you're also getting burnt out, eventually what you'll do is just be like, I'm going to burn this whole business down. I hate it. I'm just going to go do something else. I'm going to go work in, you know, for the IRS or something. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, just something, anything sounded better than that. And if you get to that point, that really sucks. Like, you don't want to hate your business.
Right. Right. So let's briefly talk about what are these stages of development for a musician's business as it relates to your book, The Musician's Profit Path.
Sure. I mean, so we all start out at the foundation stage. And that's really when you're just starting to build your audience. You're also building your own confidence on stage, kind of creating your stage persona. Now, I always tell people, you know, I understand that people are maybe at different stages in different parts of their career. So like maybe they're really seasoned on stage, but they have absolutely no marketing chops at all. Right. So you're in the foundation stage with your marketing, with your platform building, but you're maybe at a higher stage when it comes to like your stage persona and, you know, dialing in what you're doing on stage and being super confident about it. Right. So we're none of us are a perfect puzzle piece fitting into this, but so that's the foundation stage. And you're just starting to build your audience. You're getting your website up and running. You're starting to build your email list, just your first 100 subscribers even. And that could just literally be family and friends that you finally gathered into one place so you can communicate with them and let them know, because those are going to be your biggest supporters. And then the next stage is the promotion stage. And that's really where you're starting to build your email list from like 100 to 500 people. You are actually starting to get out there and promote yourself as an artist. You feel confident that you can actually charge for performing. And you're, you know, starting to get yourself some press and things like that. And I explain in each section how to do these things, what to do. And I have a checklist at the end of each section. Did you do this? Did you do this? Because I am such that person. I am like, I'm going to check everything off on my Asana every day. So I wanted to provide that for those type of people like me that want to check things off a list. Third stage is the expansion stage. So you're starting to bring in some new income streams. You're starting to go out for some bigger venues. You're starting to, you know, maybe add on some different types of performing. Maybe you're doing house concerts. Maybe you're doing festivals. And like I did, you're going to be maybe like doing keynote concerts where you're singing and speaking as well, like offering different offerings for people, expanding kind of your product suite, and then building your email list to about 1250. And then in the fourth stage is what I call the automation stage, which is, wow, you've really built your business now. You're overwhelmed with how much you're doing and you need to bring some other people onto your team to get your systems dialed in. So you need to focus on creating systems for doing things. And bringing people in to help you. And that could involve, nowadays, that could involve getting some AI involved in helping you with your systems, doing things faster, bringing in some people to help you on your team, even if it's just a few hours a week, setting up some automations. You should probably do this earlier than the automation stage if you can, at least an automation for like a welcome sequence in your email list, but just setting up some automations for when people connect with you ways to talk to them that don't involve you talking to them, you know, that they're going to get automatically, maybe letting them know about things, offerings that you have, different things in your product suite, whether that's performances or, you know, things that you sell, teaching, anything like that. And then finally, what I call the profession, you are a professional at that point, and you're just only going to be growing from there. In the automation, you kind of grow your email list to about 3,000. And then beyond that, I really think you've got, you know, 3,000 email list subscribers. Those are pretty engaged people to be on your email list anyway, but about one third of those people will be really engaged. And at that point, you've kind of got your 1,000 true fans, which I really still believe, you know, that was an article written back in 2005 or something. I still believe that that is true. If you've got 1,000 true fans, then you have a career that will support you and, you know, for even the long term. So that's kind of the goal that you're moving toward throughout these stages. And like I said, I give you very specifics in each stage on how to, you know, market, build your community, all that stuff, how to bring on people to help you and when to do those things and checklists.
Yeah, I love, I'm a box checker myself. So having a love checklist it. And knowing that you're hitting the, like, I did the thing, I did the next thing, I've done all these things. It's so gratifying to check the box, but it's also very helpful. It gives you clarity to know, okay, these are the things I did today. Like I actually, it doesn't look like I've done a whole lot, but I really have. And sometimes we just need that positive reinforcement sometimes to be like, okay, especially when you're in the heat of the slog, like you're doing the hard stuff, whatever's hard for you. For some people, that's building the mailing list. For some people, it's rehearsing. It's, you know, like whatever the hard thing is, when you've got a box that you can check and go, I did these things today, that can be very gratifying when you're in the middle of whatever the hard slog is for you. Yep. So
yeah, for sure.
If you're going to give two pieces of advice. Two pieces of advice about building a business doing what you love, right? So for musicians, but for anybody who wants to build a business doing what they love, what would you offer as your two pieces of wisdom and advice?
Okay, so the first thing I would say is as soon as you can, bring on help. Because the only way that you can expand and scale is to get yourself out of being the bottleneck. So, you know, whether that's even as simple as I'm going to pay for ChatGPT and it's going to help me write emails, or, you know, we just did a class on this in the academy, and, you know, there are ways that ChatGPT can actually cut down on a lot of your time. If you're writing blog posts, if you're writing grant applications, if you're, you know, writing emails, like just coming up with ideas, brainstorming, that kind of thing that can help you. So that's like the very lowest version of this. But I brought on people from the beginning almost, even if it was my 11-year-old daughter to help create images for the radio station or whatever it was, you know, I needed that help. I needed to expand my time in what was being done with my time. And it was a worthwhile investment at any level, I think. Even if you can only afford a few hours a week, I think it's worth it. You'll find that you'll then have more time for doing the things that are your money things, that are the things that only you can do, like perform or write songs or record or, you know, those kind of, or even just, you know, live streaming to your fans. You can't outsource that. So, you know, you need to have more time for those things. So that would be my number one piece of advice. My number two piece of advice would be find a community. Don't try to do this by yourself. Being an island is so frustrating because you also don't know what you don't know. You don't know. You think you're the only one that has these issues, you know, things like that. If something happens to you, or if you don't know how to, I remember back in the day, like I was first starting to book myself and I did not know how to have the money conversation. And I was so thankful that I was in a community of women back then. And I said, like, how do you guys do this? Like, I feel so dumb when I'm trying to do this. And they told, you know, they would say, well, this is, I understand. I was there. You know, first of all, they give you that validation. Like, yeah, I remember that too. But then I started saying this and this opened up the conversation. And then I'd be like, okay. And then I would try that. And then I'd be like, okay, well, then they said this. And then be like, okay, well, then when you get that, then I recommend you take this course of action. And so it just helps so much. It cuts down that learning curve. It makes you feel like you're not alone. And in most jobs, you know, we have people around us to make us feel like we're doing something together. And here we are doing this by ourselves. We need accountability. We need sympathy, empathy. We need guidance. And that's a community. Either, you know, if you've got a mentor, great. If you've got a coach, great. But a community is almost as good as that. And I feel like you should have both, because you can see people at all kinds of different levels of their career. And that can be encouraging to you. They can give you, you know, mentor you with experiences that they've had. And it's just so helpful to not be alone, because I was alone when I first started. And once I got community, things accelerated so much faster for me.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. There's something to be said for finding your people, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's the finding of your audience and those people, but there's the finding of the people who get you, who understand where you're at, where maybe they've been there or where you're headed, and can help keep your ship going in the right direction. Whether that's through encouragement or empowerment or sharing that little trick that they saw on some YouTube video 3 days ago that now they're telling everybody about it. And it changes your life. And you're like, oh my God, had I not been here, I never would have known. And, or it would have taken me years to discover that. And having a community, I really have to agree with you with the whole idea of both is better, because there are things you can get out of a community that you can't get from a coach. There are things mm-hmm. that you'll get from a coach that you aren't likely to get from a community. And it's important, you know, when you have the resources and the means to be able to lean into those kinds of help and support in ways that will serve you. You know, not every coach is going to kick your butt. Not every coach is going to be your best friend or your cheerleader, but you can go into a community and be like, I just need somebody to kick my butt today. I did this just the other day. I was like, I need somebody to tell me to walk away from my Instagram bio because I've tweaked it 75 times in the last 10 minutes and I just need to stop. And, you know, five voices from the beyond the ether are like, walk away from the computer, step away from the Instagram. And you're like, okay, whoo, talk myself down off the ledge, right? Like having those moments and being able to be in community with other people who get it, who get you, who've been there or who even are there sometimes, makes a huge difference in your emotional well-being.
Oh my gosh. I remember the first webinar I did, it totally crashed and burned and died. And I'm like, oh, my career is over. I'm not going to be, you know, I'm not going to teach people online because I can't handle, you know. And I went to my community and I told them like, oh yeah, that happened to me too. It's fine. People understand. They forgive you. You know, if I didn't have that community, I might've just been like, I suck. I can never handle technology. I give up.
Yep. I'm done. Turn the tables, walk away, right. You know? And if I hadn't been told years ago, your first is always your worst, you know, something that I get to tell people all the time now. It's like, if nobody had ever said that to me, I'd have been in the same boat. Like, I did it once and it wasn't perfect, so forget it, I'm done. You know, and now it's like, good can be good enough. You know, yep. Good enough can be good enough. And you'll iterate and it'll be better next time. And it'll be even better the next time after that. And
it helps you get over the fear, because once you get that first one done, you know you've done your worst and you're only on to better things.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, Bree, this has been an absolute delight. Is there anything else you want to share before we get into the how can we find you goodies and all that?
I mean, other than the fact that I am a huge advocate for women, as you probably picked that up throughout. So I have lots of ways that that women can thrive in my community. And one of them is still the Women of Substance podcast. We still have, we're almost on episode number 1600 now. So, you know, we still have shows that run all the time where we're promoting the music of artists. So we're a music show. So you can definitely go to wosradio.com if you want to check out that. If you've got music by female artists or female fronted bands, or even if you're a male writer and you've got music that's sung by females, we play that too.
Nice. Nice. So to that end, where can we find you? Where can we learn more about you and your community and all of the great things that you bring to the world besides Women of Substance?
Absolutely. So Instagram is probably the place I'm most active. It's Profitable Musician LLC. Somebody stole the Profitable Musician, so I had to go with LLC. But and then Profitable Musician on TikTok. I'm very active on both of those platforms. And of course, my podcast, profitablemusician.com. You can see the podcast there. It's on all podcast platforms. I have had Lisa on my show, so you can check out that episode as well. And then the Female Musician Academy. That's really the community slash educational platform that I'm promoting at this time. And you can connect with me on that at profitablemusician.com/FMA2 because it's the second iteration of the Female Musician Academy. And then of course my book that you can see back there if you're watching on video on Amazon, the Musician's Profit Path.
And we will have all of those links in the show notes in the description so that you guys can have easy access to all of that. Bree Noble, thank you again so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to connect with us and share all of your knowledge today. That is going to wrap it up for us. Until next time, everybody, this is Lisa Roman Young signing off, and blessings and peace. Have a great day.